Hello, everyone. This is John Marks, the editor of CopsAlive.com. Cops Alive was founded to help police professionals around the world create happy, healthy, and successful lives both on the job and beyond their jobs. And today you're listening to one of our editions of Cops Alive Audio Bulletin. Audio Bulletin is just our way of providing you with up-to-date information about a specific topic and something that we think would be of interest to you to make your career or your life better. Today our guest is retired Police Sergeant Steve Dixon, who had a combined career in law enforcement of over 36 years. He retired from the San Jose, California Police Department. And the reason we have Steve on as our guest today is he's just published his first book entitled Police Stories, Making One Bit of Difference. And I want to welcome you, Steve. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks very much for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem. I'm really excited to get a copy of this book and see what stories you've got to share with us. I've gotten some preview information, and I thank you. First of all, before we start, can you tell the audience just a little bit about you and your career to try to, you know, give us some background, and then we want to hear all about the book.
Okay, yeah. I actually grew up in a small town of Greenville, Pennsylvania, about 70 miles north of Pittsburgh. Came out of high school and joined the Army. I was in the military police in the Army. I did 6 years total in the Army. Five of those were in the military police, and about two of those were in the Frankfurt military police in Frankfurt, Germany. That's where I really became interested in law enforcement, and that's where I decided that I wanted to make law enforcement my career. So when I got out of the Army in 1976, I got hired. I put myself through the police academy here in California, mm-hmm. and got hired by the Santa Clara Police Department in California. It's about a department of about 150 officers, and I did 11 years there, and then transferred over to the San Jose Police Department, a much bigger city, much bigger department, and did 20 years there, and just retired in 2008.
Well, congratulations on your retirement.
Thanks very much.
So obviously you've put some energy into capturing some of the great stories from your career. What's it like to write a book? I've certainly tried and never finished myself, so congratulations to you.
Well, thanks. Well, you know, it's funny, John. I was at the end of my career, my last few months, I was working with a couple of young officers, and I was telling them some of the stories from my career. And one of them, Officer Patricia Hyme, was just such a darling. She was listening to all my stories, and she gets so fascinated, so excited, that she finally said one day, she said, you know, Sarge, you ought to write a book. And I had never, I'll be honest with you, had never considered writing a book. But I did realize after that I do have an awful lot of stories from my career, and hopefully that people would find interesting. And so with her prodding, I decided after I retired to go ahead and write the book, and I've just got it published.
Well, you know, congratulations. I know what a huge amount of work that is. And over and above that, I want to say thank you for what you've done, because one of the things that we talk about at Cops Alive is trying to decide on the part of every officer out there, what kind of a legacy are you going to leave behind in your career so that the work you've done outlasts the time you put under the job. And one of the best ways we can all do that is leave a legacy of knowledge and skill and information that other officers can learn from and be wary of. And, you know, the human existence is about handing down stories to make us all better. And, you know, there are a lot of cop books out there, but, you know, in my opinion, not enough. So thank you very much for what you've done. And would you just share with us a little bit about, you know, what you've done and how you package the book?
Well, first of all, I agree very much with you, because I've been teaching at our local police academies here for 26 years, and I do tactical teaching, I do car stops, I do some of the classroom stuff, and as I say, I've been doing it for an awful long time, and I've taught thousands of recruits out here, and a lot of what I do is stories. I mean, we do tell them, it's one thing to learn something out of a book, but then you take them through some of the stories and have them do scenarios based on some of the things that you've experienced, and that's how they learn how to do this stuff. So it's been fascinating for me. I still teach, even now that I'm retired, I still teach at the academy and always get a kick out of doing so.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's something about a story. You know, you can tell somebody something, but when you put it in the context of a story, people remember it better and they learn better. And, you know, my God, law enforcement is the kind of thing that we don't need to be reinventing the wheel all the time. It is pretty much the same job it's been for hundreds of years. It is about primarily human skills. And, boy, we really need to be learning from each other because we don't want to be making the same kind of mistakes. And so, you know, even though some of us hate to talk about our mistakes, it's better that we share that with somebody else.
Absolutely.
Then, you know, let them fall into the same trap.
Absolutely.
I know your stories are kind of broken down, and it sounds like you've got a couple of different kinds of stories. Is that right?
Well, yeah, a lot of different kinds of stories, but I do call it police stories, making one bit of difference. And it's interesting, the subtitle came from an officer at the Santa Clara Police Department. Now, remember, I'd come out of the military police, and I was really excited about becoming a civilian law enforcement officer because I figured that these were the professionals. And I got hired by the Santa Clara Police Department, which happens to be one of the highest-paid police departments in California. I didn't know that at the time, but so I thought, well, you know, this must be the elite. And when I got hired on, I went through the field training program of 16 weeks, and I graduated, and they put me out by myself. And once I hit the street by myself, I was so excited. I was so just eager to be out there. I have to tell you, I went to every call I could go to. I was just so excited. You couldn't keep me away from some of these calls. I was racing all over the city. Sometimes the lights and sound were on, and I was just having the time of my life and just enjoying it to death. And finally, one day, I was talking to this officer, and another call came in, which wasn't on my beat. And I started to walk to my patrol car to go to the call, and he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm going to go to that call." And that's when he told me, he said, "Look, slow down, take it easy." He said, "You are not going to make one bit of difference." And that's where I got the subtitle for the book, Making One Bit of Difference.
Yeah, I'm assuming you disagreed with him then, and you probably have disagreed with him throughout your entire career.
I did, and you know, it's funny, and he was actually a very good officer. He was one of my mentors, actually, but he was a very, very good officer, and I didn't realize until later on what he was really trying to tell me, but I did disagree with him, and as you read my book, you'll see that he was wrong about me, and he was wrong about some other officers, but honestly, he was right about a lot of the officers that I worked with. I have to be honest with you, I worked with a lot of officers, both at Santa Clara and San Jose, who really didn't make much of a difference and didn't want to make much of a difference. So, and I'm trying to reach, you know, all of these officers and say, hey, don't get demoralized. Don't give up. You really can do it. You can make a difference out there if you just work hard.
Yeah, I don't even know how I would have gotten through my career. And I only did 23 years to your 36, so congratulations. But I don't know how I would have gotten through my career if I didn't have that kind of hope, if I didn't believe that I could make a difference, because, you know, sometimes that was the only thing keeping me going. And I have retired knowing full well I made a great deal of difference in a lot of people's lives, and that gives me a tremendous amount of satisfaction. I feel sad for those officers that don't have that. I know the job can be overwhelming and it can really beat you down, but this is the one area where we can keep a ray of hope, not only for ourselves, but even for society that we're actually leaders of. And I think that's what the job is all about.
I think so, too. And I think, like I said, what I've seen out here in California is that so many officers give up. And honestly, my book talks about the leadership on some police departments. And it does seem, when I got hired at Santa Clara, I have to be honest with you, it really did seem to me and to other officers that the leadership preferred the bad cops, the lazy cops, over the good ones. The good cops were always getting in trouble, always getting chewed out, always getting yelled at for something, and the bad cops were left alone. So there's this tendency for the good cops to kind of give up and say, hey, the heck with it, I'm going to become a bad cop. But you're right, you have to keep that. I actually faced that twice when I was at Santa Clara. There were two different occasions that I got so upset, I said, that's it, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to do what the bad cops do. I call them slugs. I said, I'll become a slug if that's what they want.
Yep.
And, John, I got to tell you, I found out I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I heard a shooting or a stabbing come in, and I just promised myself 5 minutes earlier that I wasn't going to go to it. And I had to go to it. I just said, I don't care. I'm a good cop. I'm going to do good police work. I don't care what anybody says, what anybody thinks. And I am going to make a difference.
Yeah. Yeah, I think every one of us knows the slugs out there. And I do think that they're the minority. And I do think that at some time in their career, they were good cops that just got burned out and didn't know how to control that. And that's a shame, because that is a leadership responsibility, in my opinion, that has to come from the organization. But I think when you and I first talked, I told you that one of my buddies at one point asked our supervisor, hey, has anybody ever been fired here for being lazy? And the answer was no. And I was like, okay, fine, you know, kind of setting the standard. Now, that officer was joking. He wasn't a slug, and actually he's still working. He's not. But it was the exact same thing. It's a symptom of agency and even leadership complacency, and it's a shame. And I'm glad you're speaking out about it.
You know, it's funny that I have some officers. There are a couple of officers that made testimonials for me, but I just went to my police department, San Jose Police Department, yesterday and just passed out a few books. And I've had a couple of phone calls already from officers that are so excited about it, and they're talking about how well it was written and some of the stories. And they're glad that this word is getting out there because mm-hmm. I think good cops are really going to like this book. I think the bad cops, the slugs, won't read it because they're not going to like it. But I agree with you. There are some officers. I saw some officers who came on, and the very first day they were lazy. They really weren't going to amount to much. But most of them, honestly, John, like you said, started out to be good cops, and they got so depressed and so demoralized they just gave up. And that's what I'm trying to do with this book is saying, hey, look, don't give up. You can still do this stuff. You can still make a difference, no matter how bad your supervisors, no matter how bad your leaders are. You can still make a difference out there, and that's going to make all the difference in your life if you'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the thing about law enforcement is you never know what you're going to get the minute you put on that badge and the uniform, take the car, and go out. Actually, in any assignment, doesn't matter what you're doing, whether you're a parole officer or a corrections officer or anything, you just never know what to expect from day to day. And so I'm betting that most people will make a difference even when they don't expect to. But I sure like the attitude of setting that as a goal and actually kind of going out there. And I think that's kind of what I got the tone of your book, is that you're kind of actually using your role in a leadership position to say, hey, let's go out there. I made a difference. You can make a difference. And you're being pretty motivational. I like that.
And I'm trying to, and that's what I'm trying to do. And like I say, it's a lot of officers will disagree with their chiefs. A lot of officers will disagree with their sergeants or lieutenants and whatever, and that's fine. But like I say, don't give up. Don't get all demoralized. I know sometimes it looks like, you know, these lazy cops are not being punished. The good cops are. But you still got to be a good cop. And like I said, I think one of the big draws of this job, honestly, for me, was that unknown. I mean, when you put that uniform on every day and you hit the street in that patrol car, you really did not know what was going to happen. And I can remember, you know, you expect a Friday night to be very busy and a Sunday morning to be very quiet. And sometimes it was just the opposite. Sometimes nothing happened on Friday, and a Sunday morning was so quiet that I mean, was so busy, rather, that it just came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
We had a day, a Sunday morning one day in Santa Clara, which was a fairly small city, and we knew it was going to be a quiet day. The lieutenant didn't even have his gun belt on. And we had a big pursuit and auto theft of Burke and his suspect, and everything had to come to a stop while the watch commander went back and got all of his weapons, all of his belt on and everything, and then he came back and took charge of the scene. It was kind of funny, but we do that. We do you kind of assume that there's going to be a quiet day, and in law enforcement you can't do that. You can never assume.
Well, I love that, Steve, because I mean there's kind of an embedded message there that every time you think you know what's going to happen and you're going to be a little bit lazy about doing the things you know you have to do every day, like wear all of your equipment, including your vest.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be that day that something's going to happen, and you know, some people learn that lesson the hard way. Hopefully, they only learn it once.
Yeah.
Before we go too much further, I wanted to make sure that I gave your web address so that people can learn about the book and purchase a copy of the book. It is www.onebitofdifference.com.
Yep.
And there are some example stories on there, and people can learn about the book. They can order the book. Are there any examples, any stories you want to share with us here?
There were a couple of stories. I'm also, by the way, in addition to the website, I'm on Facebook. For those who are on Facebook, it might be easier to find me on the Facebook page. Same thing with Facebook/ Police Stories. You can find me on there.
Okay, good.
The book is for sale on Amazon.com. And I have to tell you, the book is called Police Stories, Making One Bit of Difference. But there are a lot of police stories on Amazon. So if you look on Amazon, just go to my website. It'll make it easier. But if you go on Amazon by yourself, then it's Police Stories by Sergeant Steve Dixon. That'll make it easier for you.
Good. Thanks.
But a couple of the stories. One thing that I wanted to cover is I arrested, when I was at Santa Clara, I arrested two rape suspects. They were both serial rape suspects, and they were both juveniles. They were both 16 years old.
Wow.
And I won't get into all the details of that arrest, but except to say that it led to the best arrest of my career. About 3 weeks after I arrested the second juvenile rape suspect, we had a very brutal rape in Mervyn's Plaza in Santa Clara. And that happened on a Wednesday night. I was working day shift the next morning, Thursday morning, and the officer who took the report flagged me down because he knew that I had arrested these other two rape suspects just a couple of weeks earlier. And so he told me all about it, and And I got all the information I could, and I went out, hit the street, and of course I handled a bunch of calls that day, but I went over to Mervyn's and tried to find some leads on the case, and really didn't come up with anything, and I did that for the next 2 days. But 2 days later, on a Saturday morning, I was working again, and I remember about 10 o'clock that morning, I was driving down El Camino Real, right past the Mervyn's Plaza. Now that morning, that Saturday morning, we had just gotten a sketch of the suspect, and a little bit more information. His name was Bill. He was driving an older brown sedan, and he had a brown wide-brim leather hat. That was part of the information we got as well. And I remember about 10 o'clock that morning, I was going to an alarm at a residence in Santa Clara, and I'm driving past Mervyn's Plaza, and I see this old brown sedan in the northern part of the parking lot. And I thought, well, you know, it's probably not the right car, but I'll check it out after I get done with this alarm. So I went to the alarm and came back and checked out the car, and really, honestly, kind of nonchalant about it, and walked up to the car, and it was unoccupied. But in the back seat, I saw this wide rimmed brown leather hat, and wow. I remember, it's over 30 years later now, I can still remember how excited I got when I saw that hat, because I knew I had the suspect's car, and I knew if I have his car, he can't be far away, he's here someplace.
Yeah.
And I'm checking out the car, and a fellow from a gas station nearby called out, and he said, hey officer, is there something wrong with that car? And I said no, not really. I said, do you know who owns it? And he said, yeah, Bill. Well, I got really excited because the suspect told the victim his name was Bill. So, and I said, well, do you know where Bill is? Well, Bill worked there at the gas station, but he had gone across the street to a McDonald's. And I just casually said, well, have him come out and talk to me when he gets back. And he did. He came out about 5 minutes later. And John, I have to tell you, as soon as he walked out of that gas station, I knew it was him because he just fit the sketch to a T.
Wow.
But I didn't want to arrest him just yet. I want to make sure I had enough probable cause. So I got to tell you, I just had a conversation with him, and I've always had a pretty good gift of gab. And he and I just started talking, and I actually told him I was looking into a robbery to kind of throw him off the scent a little bit. And he was very cooperative with me, and he let me search his car. He gave me his identification, and as I'm running him for warrants, I said, have you ever been arrested before? And he just, I'll never forget his answer. He said, yeah, I did 5 years for 261. Well, 261 is our penal code section for rape.
Yeah.
So I had no doubt I had the right guy, but he let me search his car. Didn't find anything of evidence in there. But I had a talk with him, and I said, would you mind coming in to get this taken care of? And he still thought we were talking about a robbery. And he said, sure, no problem. He's very, very cooperative, and took him in. And the detective was on the way in, but it was going to take about 30 minutes. So Bill and I sat there in a small interview room talking for about 30 minutes. We talked about Army times. He said he was in the Army, and I just kept talking with him. I bought him a soda. And the detective came in, and I thought, as a young officer, I'd only been on for 3 years at that time, and I thought that it was my job to introduce him to the detective and then leave. So I said, Bill, this is so-and-so, and introduced him. And the detective sat down, and I got up, and I started to walk out. And I heard Bill say, I've never forgotten it, he said, I'm not going to make any statement or answer any questions. And I thought that, you know, I just wasted that last 30 minutes. And then he added, unless Officer Dixon is in the room.
He
would not talk to anybody but me. He was so so impressed with me, and so we and of course the detective said, yeah, Steve, sit down. So I sat down, and we talked to Bill, and the detective would ask him some questions, and sometimes he'd freeze up, and come on, Bill, I was his friend. Hey, you got to tell us what happened here. Tell us your side of it. And he never did make a full confession, but he made an awful lot of admissions, and we knew at that point that he, you know, we had plenty of evidence to get him convicted. And I was taking him out of the interview room a little bit later, down the hallway to get to process him, to take him over to the county jail. And he stopped me in the hallway, and John, I've never forgotten this. He stopped me in the hallway, and he said, Officer Dixon, I want to tell you something. He said, I've been arrested a dozen times. You've seen my record. He said, but you're the only police officer I've ever met who treated me with respect. He said, and I really appreciate it.
Wow.
And I don't have any doubt. He knew, of course, we were talking about the rape at that point, and I don't have any doubt that he knew he's on his way back to state prison, but he took just a moment of his time to stop and tell me that he appreciated that I was the only police officer he had ever met that treated him with respect, and that's why he talked to me, and that's why he wouldn't answer any of the detective's questions, but he did talk to me, and I wish more officers would pick up on that. I wish that more officers would learn how to treat not just suspects, but how to treat citizens, but I've never forgotten that here's a violent serial rapist who made all of these statements. Let me search his car. He voluntarily come into the station and clear it up all because one police officer treated him with respect.
Yeah.
And that's what I try to pass on to my academy students, too. When you learn, and I call it command presence. They think the command presence is yelling at people and bossing people around, and it's just the opposite. It's getting people to do what you want them to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember one of the lessons I learned in the academy that served me well is very similar to that, and that is, You know, if you start out being fair and calm and respectful with somebody, you have a whole spectrum of behavior that you can run through all the way up to yelling and maybe putting your hands on a suspect. But if you start at the top end, you have got nowhere else to go.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, and, yeah, I agree. I've seen a lot of young cops come out of the academy. Apparently, they don't teach that everywhere because they think that their way is to, you know, try to be dynamic and control the situation by being rude and aggressive and loud and insulting to people. And I've watched many a suspect clam up right after that happens. And, you know, then you got nowhere to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just, and like I said, we teach that. Actually, we try to teach it at the academy. And I could see that some of the recruits pick up on it, and some of them, they still think, for whatever reason, that maybe another officer told them something differently or whatever. But they still, just like you said, they still think that they got to be heavy-handed, they got to be, you know, badge heavy and treat people roughly, and they're not going to be successful in law enforcement, I can tell you. Bill, a guy like Bill never would have talked to him. He would have clammed up, said, I want my lawyer.
Yeah,
he answered all of my questions. He answered everything. We did everything I wanted him to do.
And if he had clammed up from the get-go, you might not have got any kind of an arrest nor a conviction on him.
No, exactly. You know, and the other thing, and this, I think the victim was 17 years old. She would have had to go on the court in front of a jury in a crowded courtroom and tell everybody what happened. Bill went into court and pled guilty.
Yeah.
So none of that happened. Just by treating somebody decently, we prevented all of that.
Yeah. That's a good story. I love it. You know, I know I read some of the story examples you had, and some of them are amusing, but some of them really have kind of a message like that. It seems like you've probably culled some of these over the years that you've used as you've been training other officers. Do you have any other words of wisdom that you want to share with the people that are listening?
You know, it's just a matter of, for me, it was all the work ethic. It was there's a story in the book about being in working the unmarked car, and I hated working the unmarked car, but there a shooting call came out, and I was in the unmarked car that particular day, and I hated going code 3 in the unmarked car because it was very difficult doing that, but I knew I would not be the first officer there. And one thing about my career, especially the 11 years I was at the Santa Clara Police Department, is that for a lot of the most dangerous calls that I got to, I was the first officer there. And in the unmarked car, I knew it would not be the first officer there. But it was so funny in this case here. I was looking for the suspects. They were in a blue Corvette, and I was going up northbound on Lawrence Expressway, and they were last seen heading towards Lawrence Expressway on McMurphy. So I'm looking for the suspects as I'm going northbound, and I spotted a blue Corvette. So I went up to the intersection, made a U-turn, and got in behind them. And it was very heavy traffic, so I said, hey, it turned out to be the right car. Now, they just shot somebody, as it turned out. It was a shooting call, and somebody had been shot. So I knew I had the right suspects. There were two of them in the car. I was by myself. And I decided I was just going to follow them and wait for backup to get there. But unfortunately, I think they spotted me because they drove over onto the right shoulder. They started passing other cars, and they took off. Mm-hmm. And so I went after them. I turned my light on, and they took a right turn onto a street called Lilac, right off of Lawrence Expressway. But they spun out. They took the turn too fast, and they spun out. So as I came around the corner, I just stopped, and I'm probably 50 feet away from them or something, waiting to see what they're going to do. And as they started to drive away, I knew I'd never catch that Corvette.
Right.
I said, the heck with it. So I rammed them. I rammed the right front fender of their car, pushed it into the tire, and I disabled their car.
Hmm.
Well, now I'm stuck 15 feet away from two armed and dangerous suspects. I got my car out. But what happened is I'm trying to talk on my hand pack radio to the dispatcher, and I'm just getting a squeal because my hand pack was too close to my car radio.
Yep.
So I'm waiting for backup. I'm trying to contact my dispatcher. She just keeps saying to repeat. And I know I'm in trouble because I got two really dangerous suspects here, and my dispatcher can't hear me. And I'm waiting for a backup officer, and this car came squealing in behind me. And I thought it was an off-duty officer. He flashed a badge, so I figured it's an off-duty police officer. And at least I now have a backup. He gets out of his car, and he's just a little guy. But now that I had backup, I said, okay, cover me. I didn't look at him. I just told him. I said, cover me. I'm going to get these guys out of the car. I get them out of the car. I pull them out. They're both pretty big guys. They're both under the influence of crank. I get them handcuffed, and after I get the second guy handcuffed, a Sunnyvale police officer, the neighboring city of Sunnyvale, one of their officers comes up code 3, and it was all over. I got the suspects in custody and got them handcuffed, and the violence was over. And we transported those guys in later on, and what was funny is at the station I heard that the passenger called the driver by a different name. He had a California driver's license, but the passenger called him by a different name.
Hmm.
And so I decided to run some other checks, and I found out who he really was. He had a no-bail fugitive worn out. He turned out to be a really, really dangerous character, and had sworn that he would never be taken alive. And what was funny is that I'm just a young officer at Santa Clara PD, and I get all these plainclothes guys started coming in. There must have been 20 of them that suddenly came into the Santa Clara Police Department, and they got me off to the, they looked at the suspect, and they're all shaking their heads, and they got me off to the side, and probably four or five times I had to tell that story. They said, tell us again how this happened, because they couldn't believe that, that I had arrested this guy. And, of course, I made a point of saying that my only backup officer was an unarmed security guard, as it turned out. He wasn't a police officer. He was a security guard from a theater.
Oh, my God.
And I mean, he had no gun, no nothing, and that was my backup officer. And these guys were just scratching their heads and shaking their heads. They could not believe it, and they were the ones that told me. They said, hey, this guy, he is a bad character, and he had sworn he would not be taken alive. They already had anticipated that it was going to be a big shootout with the SWAT team when anybody ever found this guy, and some lowly patrol officer at Santa Clara PD ended up arresting him. So, of course, I made out like it was no big deal, but it turned out it was a big deal. So.
I'm assuming you didn't find out that it was an unarmed security guard until after everything was over.
Oh, yeah, no, and again, you know, because you know yourself, John, from being out there, that right. You can't take your eyes off the suspect,
right.
Because, you know, you're watching him. So he just kind of came up from behind me. I saw his badge when he came around the corner in his car.
Yeah.
So I couldn't turn around and look at him. I just said, cover me. And he did. He just stood there. And
oh, great.
All he had was a badge and a pair of handcuffs. That's all he had. And he was a really small guy, so he wouldn't have been a lot of help. And it was just so funny when I went over to thank him. I said, who do you work for? And he said, Century 21. I said, what? Yeah, Century 21 Theater. Oh, my God. Good Lord.
Well, at least it gave you that confidence, even though you may not have had it if you'd known what the circumstances were.
Just go and deal
with these guys.
Yeah.
Well, that is the fun part about law enforcement. I think every single one of us, some of us are good about telling our stories around the dinner table or around the, you know, the table at a restaurant. But even for those people that aren't, we all have our stories, and law enforcement is one of the most fascinating careers in the world. And we meet certainly the most dangerous, but the most unusual people and in the most unusual circumstances.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And it's like I say, and it was so, honestly, it was easy for me to write the book because I've done so much and I've handled, you know, so many cases. But like I say, I mean, when the officer told me that you're not going to make one bit of difference, I got to be honest with you, I don't know of any other career where you can actually make more of a difference in people's lives. I mean, it's just really sometimes even on relatively minor calls, you can make a difference in somebody's life. It's just almost every day you're going to have an opportunity, even in a small way, to make a difference in somebody's life. And I talk about, you know, making a lot of arrests and doing that sort of stuff, but one day I was looking for a warrant suspect in a bad neighborhood of San Jose. This is gang territory, low-income apartments, and I went out by myself at first to see if he was there. He was an Asian male, and as I got out of my patrol car, these six or seven Vietnamese kids came up, and they were all, you know, six, seven, 8 years old. And they asked if I was looking for somebody, and I said, yeah, and I showed them the picture, and they said, no, he doesn't live there anymore. It's a Mexican family. And I said, well, let me check it out. So I went up and checked it out, and sure enough, the suspect didn't live there anymore. And so I went out to the boys, and they were waiting for me, and they're by my police car, and they wanted to see all my equipment. They wanted to see the lights and the siren. And again, it's a tough neighborhood, and so I thought I'd spend a few minutes with the boys talking to them and talking about police work. And then an ice cream truck came down the street, so I just got an idea. I said, you know what? Since you guys helped me on my car, I'm going to buy you all ice cream. So I bought ice cream for them, and all these kids started coming out of all these apartments. It must have been 25 kids that came out to get free ice cream. But, you know, John, I sat there, and the other kids went in their apartments, but I sat there with these seven or eight kids. And, again, they saw the lights, they saw the siren, they saw all my equipment. And I probably sat there for 10 minutes talking to them and eating ice cream and talking about police work. And you know what? I mean, just something like that. I mean, it's you can make a difference with these kids. Just by doing something, you buy them ice cream and sit there talking about police work. That was a great day for me.
Yeah, it's the little things sometimes. And again, it gets back to showing respect and courtesy to the public that we serve, whether we are suspicious of them or not. And sometimes that goes a long way.
It does, yeah. And it's I see officers all the time. You see kids waiting by the police car. You know they want to talk to an officer. And I see officers get in their cars and drive away, and not me. You know what? Unless I had to go to an emergency call, I'd always stop and talk to the kids. And we got little sticker badges. Give them a little badge.
Yep.
Talk about police work. And hey, let's get them while they're young and get them feeling better about the police. You know, because a lot of kids, obviously, are afraid of the police. They,
right.
they think that, you know, we're violent and all this sort of stuff. And in this sort of neighborhood, in gang territory, you know, some of their brothers and fathers and relatives have been arrested by the police, so they're fearful of us. But when you get an opportunity like that to sit and eat ice cream and talk with these kids, it was just a great day.
Good for you. You know, Steve, I'm going to put you on the spot here for just a second because I don't know whether you have any stories like this in your book, but the whole purpose behind Cops Alive is helping police officers survive a career that can be very toxic. You know, we have huge rates of heart attack and alcoholism and suicide in our ranks because many officers become overwhelmed by stress and all the things that they have to see and do. And I'm kind of curious what your philosophy is about how you survive the career and what kind of things you would recommend to young officers, particularly since you teach in the academy. What would you say to the audience about how to make it through this career and get out on the other side and sort of live happily ever after?
I recommend two things. First of all, I recommend physical fitness. I have to stress that so much. And I taught physical training at our academy for 15 years. I don't teach it any longer, but you know, even now being retired, I still go to the gym 5 days a week and like to work out and like to stay in shape. But honestly, in our career, what we noticed out here in California is only about 10 or 11% of our officers really bother to work out, even the bare minimum, 3 days a week. And it's actually more than that now. But even 3 days a week, most of our officers just don't do it. And they're making a big mistake. I can't stress that enough. Physical fitness is going to be paramount. The other thing that helped me in my career is that I've always been a class clown. I just enjoy humor. And they really do say, you know, laughter is the best medicine. I believe it because we've done so many things. We would pick on each other at the police department. We'd pull pranks and do all sorts of things. And you know, when even if I was the butt of the jokes, if everybody in the briefing room was laughing at me, that's just fine. I mean, I got no problem with that. Because again, the next day I'll be picking on somebody. Everybody will be laughing at somebody else. But you know, it's that comedy. It's that release by having fun with each other. And again, I think with any job, you have to have fun with it. And yeah. What I found in police work is you're not going to have fun until you get good at it. So you got to do a lot of it and get good at it, and then the job is going to start to be fun.
Yeah.
I've seen people that have been off for 5 or 6 years and really haven't done very much. They're still not having fun, but that means you haven't done enough. You got to get to be a good cop, and then you enjoy it. But I really would stress get in shape, get yourself to a gym, and get in shape and stay in shape, and just enjoy the job. I mean, enjoy the people you're around, and if you get a chance to pull some pranks on somebody, for heaven's sakes, do it.
Yeah, we certainly did a lot of that when I was working, and I hope. You know, sometimes I think that the new officers that are coming on nowadays, they seem much more serious. I don't know if that's the generation or what, but I'm hoping that they will accept some of that legacy from our generation and that they will have fun with this job. It is an expertise, and they do need to build their skills, and they need to be constantly learning and growing. But I absolutely agree with you. Without that sense of humor, the world does look very dark from a cop's perspective.
And it's funny, from the perspective of a class clown, and I did it even back in high school, I was always a class clown, but there was a day, and it just as an example, for one day at the San Jose Police Department, we had about 100 officers in our briefing for swing shift and maybe a dozen sergeants, a dozen dispatchers. So there was a lot of people in the room, and the chief was there on this particular day. We didn't see the chief a whole lot, but the chief was there this day, and the lieutenant stepped forward, and I most days in briefing, I didn't know what I was going to do, but people always look to me to act up and do something. And this day, the lieutenant stepped forward, and he said, "We're going to start up this program called the Officer of the Month." Well, this is something we had done a few years earlier, and so we knew that the Officer of the Month had a parking space right next to the building, and parking was really hard to come by back then, so this was a big deal. Whoever got the award for the Officer of the Month, I mean, that was a big deal. And the lieutenant, as soon as he said, "We're going to start the program up again," I got out of my seat, and I started walking to the front of the room. And nobody figured out what I was doing. Nobody paid any attention to me. The lieutenant just kept talking. He said, this month the award is going to go to an officer, and he just kept talking. And I'm still walking to the front of the room. And I got to the front of the room, and I turned. I started walking directly towards the lieutenant. And one of my good buddies on the department, his name was Moses, and I'd been sitting right next to him, and even he didn't figure out what I was doing. But I'm walking right directly towards the lieutenant. I got about 10 feet away from the lieutenant, and Moses finally figured out what I was doing. And he yelled out. He interrupted the lieutenant and said, "Dixon, sit down." Well, everything got quiet. The lieutenant stopped talking. Everybody in the briefing room, even the chief, is trying to figure out, what in the world am I doing? And I turned and looked at all the officers, and I said, well, it's got to be me. I said, who else could it be? It's got to be me. You know, officer of the month, of course, it's got to be me. And they're all booing and laughing and throwing stuff at me. And I had my fun. I went back and sat down. And, of course, the award went to somebody else that month. But hey, you got to have fun.
I agree. And, yeah, it seems like roll call is a time for those kind of things to happen. And, you know, you just gave me an idea. Maybe we'll do a special on Cops Alive and invite people to contribute their favorite practical joke, because I can certainly think of a number of them that we used or were used on me. So
yeah,
there are plenty of them out there.
That'd be a good idea. Yeah, some of these cops are pretty, they come up with some pretty good ideas.
Yeah, some of my friends were way too creative. They had way too much time on their hands.
I worked with some of those as well.
Well, Steve, I'm really thoroughly enjoying this. Is there something else you want to share with us, or shall we bring this to an end?
No, I just, like I said, I just think, like I said, I hope people will pick up the book, and it's not just for cops, it's for citizens as well. I want citizens to know what happens on their police departments.
Yep.
And why we have so many good cops and why we have some who aren't so good. But I want the main message is for police officers, and it's for them to say, don't give up. Yes, things might be bad. Yes, you may disagree with your leaders or do whatever, but you can still make a difference out there. And if you do, if you will make a difference out there, that's going to make a difference in your life. It's going to be a great career. Just don't give up.
Yeah. Yeah, I like what you just said. If you make a difference out there, it's going to make a difference in your life. And that's the important thing. And certainly from our perspective here, we want people to be really good cops. We want them to take care of their communities, because it's our community too.
Yeah.
And we want them to survive this job, and we want to try to do something about all the horrible things that seem to happen to cops because of the toxicity of the stress that comes from this work. We want you to get through safely. We want you to survive. We want you to live happily ever after. And I love your approach. You know, make sure you keep your body sharp, your mind sharp, and make it fun. I like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, retired Police Sergeant Steve Dixon, I thank you very, very much for your time. I thank you for your service in your career and then bringing a little bit of that with you after you left to share with everybody else, because, as I said earlier, your legacy then will pass on to other officers. Hopefully they will learn from your successes. They will avoid perhaps the mistakes that you might have made. And I think all in all, hopefully the world would be a better place.
I think so, too, and I sure appreciate you having me on. Thanks very much.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for your time, and thank you for all to all those people that are out there listening. Please go again to the website, www.onebitofdifference.com, or look for Steve on Facebook/Police Stories. You can find that book on Amazon.com, but make sure it's Sergeant Steve Dixon is the author. But you might help Steve out by supporting him and all that he's done by buying this book and giving it as a Christmas gift or passing it on to your friends. And you might ask yourself what it is you can do as a legacy. What are you going to do at the end of your career to try to pass on some of your knowledge and some of your wisdom to other cops? Steve, thank you. And to all of you that are listening, this has been Cops Alive Audio Bulletin. I'm John Marks. I'm hoping that you have a very safe, happy, and healthy career, and that you are able to leave the job and celebrate with your family. Stay safe out there, and we will see you on another edition of Cops Alive Audio Bulletin.